Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. Wow. That was pretty. That was lovely. Give me more of that. Context be damned too, right? Obviously, the Warriors are missing. Steph didn't play last night. Klay Thompson is still going to be out for the rest of the year. Draymond Green is still in post-extension, gain 25 pounds mode. Willie Cauley-Stein is obviously not playing. Kevon Looney also didn't go. So the Lakers, like, they were perfectly set up to dominate this game. But the Lakers teams that we've watched over the last few years haven't always dominated games that they were supposed to. Like, just last year, Pete made a bet with me saying that the Lakers would not lose another stupid game and had to buy me a beer, I think, three nights later because of that bet. Like, the Lakers have always kind of played with their food historically, but holy crap, that was impressive. That was incredible. The Lakers take down the Golden State Warriors 126-93. And even that doesn't feel like as close as it was, or that doesn't quite sell how dominant the Lakers were. Let's just go through some plus-minus numbers here for some important players. Anthony Davis, plus 19. LeBron, plus 30. JaVale McGee, plus 23. Danny Green, plus 23. Dwight Howard, plus 14. So basically, like, there are not going to be very many minutes where one of those four players aren't going to be on the court this year. I would go so far as to say that there aren't going to be any minutes where one of those four guys aren't on the court, if not multiple. But in those minutes where those four guys were in, the Lakers were just absolutely dominant. Like, older brother playing on a lowered rim, showing younger brother what's what. Like, that's how ugly the front court battle was. And again, this isn't the same Golden State team that you're going to see over the course of the year. Not having Looney is big. Not having Cauley-Stein is also really big, just because he's like the closest thing to a true big that they have. But good Lord, like, that was just, it was just a beatdown from the very get-go. So I have a few points to make about it. One, this front court might actually be legit, and the way that it's kind of put together might actually be able to take full advantage of the advantages it has just inherently, given how big and athletic and skilled that front court is. The guard play tonight or last night was incredible. Avery Bradley shoots 7 of 9 and 4 of 5 from 3-point range. Obviously, you're not going to get that on a nightly basis, but, like, that's the kind of approach, especially defensively. I was really impressed how he played defensively. To that's the way he wants to, or you need him to approach the game on a nightly basis to play alongside the starters. And you know, he did start. Quinn Cook came in and did exactly what Lakers fans should have been hoping that he did, right? So the guard play is interesting. And then, you know, to kind of build off of that guard play conversation, I don't know where Rondo fits there. Right. We also kind of saw a little bit from the wing where Kyle Kuzma could really stand to make this team better. And it's wild that you can say that kind of a thing on a night where the Lakers just absolutely bone crushed the team that they were playing against. So let's start though with that front court. And again, for the third time now, the caveat is how small and how undermanned the Warriors were. Right? This was probably the worst matchup that they could have faced, maybe aside from Philly, that they could have faced across the entire league. But again, you take care of what's in front of you, and the Lakers did that. And it's funny. Jen was watching the game with me, and she was sitting there with Avery in her arms. And that play with, I think it started with a Caruso lob to LeBron, who then lobbed it to Dwight Howard. And it was just like a play straight out of NBA Jam. Like, it was the kind of play that you make in NBA Jam just to severely clown your opponent. Jen's holding Avery there. She's like, oh my God, oh my God. She almost dropped my daughter, our daughter. And I couldn't even blame her. Like, had she dropped Avery, I would have been like, oh, that's probably not great for her. But I get why that happened. I'm kidding. Please don't drop your kids. But where how that happened or whatever, like, I haven't seen. One of the things that I really keep an eye on when I'm watching these games, especially with Jen, is how do casual fans kind of respond to what they're watching out there? And Jen just kept saying, like, that's unfair. It doesn't feel fair. They should call this off because it just isn't fair. And she was right. She was absolutely right. The Lakers are just too big. And more importantly, the centerpieces of the team that have that size are so skilled that they can take full advantage of that size. And, you know, LeBron put on a show, that pass that he made right before he exited the game to Danny Green, that kind of tilt-a-whirl, left-handed, behind over his shoulder pass that hit Danny Green on the money, and you know Green finished it. Thank goodness for to finish off the play. Like, that was just incredible. And you're kind of seeing this different pep in his step in LeBron's, and it's carrying out. Like, we Pete and I have talked about this now a few times. That energy that LeBron carries with himself out there, well, that's now spreading to the rest of the team. And when it does that, and the entire group plays the way that they did tonight, it's going to be really tough to beat them. Let's take a quick second. When we come back, I'm going to continue to talk about this game and focus next on the guards. All right, let's talk about the guard play. Avery Bradley, look, it's not just about the production, right? Obviously, 7 of 9 from the field, 4 of 5 from deep. He finished with a plus 8, and this is kind of what you're going to see from him, that I think he's going to be one of the worst kind of rotation players, plus or minus-wise. He still has some bad habits that I don't think, like, I think it's kind of late in the game for him to actually address those, but overall, his approach last night was the exact kind of approach that you want to see from him. Don't worry about, you know, knocking the ball out of D'Angelo Russell's hands. And Russell is a good matchup for him because Russell doesn't have the foot speed to really make him pay for his over-aggressive defensive style. So you kind of have that going for you. But just contain, stay in front. Apply ball pressure every so often just so that the opposing point guard doesn't get into any kind of a rhythm. But, you know, just don't hurt the defense by continually giving up straight line drives to the basket. And I thought he did that fairly well. Could be better still, but he did that better than he has all preseason. And then offensively, got a little nervous when he started the game with a off-the-dribble, mid-range contested pull-up that he made, granted. But I was a little nervous, like, this isn't the kind of shot that you want from Avery Bradley. But I thought from that point forward, for the most part, he was really good at, and the defense, look, when you're as undersized and as outmatched as the Warriors were, you're going to pick and choose what you're going to give up. And what they very clearly decided to give up was wide open looks to Avery Bradley specifically. And he made them pay. And what I thought was more important than just making them pay, because again, it's a preseason game, it doesn't really matter, but more important than just merely making the shots, he didn't hesitate at all. It was catch, and it was a confident stroke out there. And that, to me, is about as important a takeaway from this game as you're going to find. And then behind him comes in Quinn Cook, who was just, holy crap, right? Now, I thought, now, you know, Quinn, quote unquote, Quinn Cook can shoot isn't exactly groundbreaking analysis. That's always what he's been able to do. He's a career 40% 3-point shooter. So that shouldn't exactly shock anybody. But the stuff off the dribble, the creation off the dribble, I think he finished tonight with he had 3 assists, and even when he wasn't assisting, he was making the right play, hockey assists and stuff like that. Merely getting the ball up on the rim, just because, you know, defenses are, if they're going to contest the layup, that means you're going to have either Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis, or JaVale McGee right beneath the basket waiting for that offensive rebound. And so you get a lot of those kind of Mark Jackson assists. They aren't obviously called assists, but just get the ball up on the rim and let your big get to the basket and punish whoever had to try to rotate over and box them out. I thought Cook and everybody amongst the Lakers guards did a really good job of that. But more than anything, I really think Cook is probably going to be one of the best offensive rating players that the Lakers have this year, just because of his ability to stretch the floor. Opposing teams. So we talk a lot about, yes, Rajon Rondo did hit on like 36% of his 3-pointers last year. And yet, opposing defenses like literally run away from him. Quinn Cook is going to be the opposite of that. Even on nights where he doesn't quite have it, even on nights where he isn't necessarily hitting, opposing defenses are still going to go out of their way to try to limit or make worse the type of look that he's getting out there. So what that's going to do is now LeBron has more room. Now Anthony Davis has more room. Now, you know, whoever the other player, tonight it was Alex Caruso who handled the ball in some of those stretches where he and Quinn Cook were out there together. And now look, Caruso continues to not quite meet our expectations. He finished only 1 of 4 from the field, 0 of 2 from the 3-point range, but a plus 16, right? So it's kind of like the opposite of the Avery Bradley thing, where you say, "Wow, Bradley played incredible," and you look at like, "Oh, you know, I wonder what was going on there with the plus minus." And then you look at Alex Caruso and you say, "Wow, I wonder what was going on with his game." And then you look at, "Oh, wow, he was a positive impact out there." Now he was out there for a few stretches in garbage time, though. I do believe the Lakers basically maintained. I don't think they stretched the score out in that time. So it was really, and I think this has a lot to do with Caruso playing alongside Quinn Cook. It was really Caruso had a little bit more room to operate, gives him a little bit more time on his decision making, and it makes him a better player. And I think that's how what you're going to see in those minutes with Quinn Cook. I'm really fascinated to see. I don't think he'll start the year. I think it's probably still going to be Bradley. But if it is Cook, he does have some of those creation chops. And even if he doesn't, this means you don't need Rondo as badly among that second unit or with that second unit. And look, even Kentavious Caldwell-Pope finishes a plus 12, 3 of 6 from the floor, 2 of 4 from 3-point range. And didn't look like you wanted to kick him off the floor. It was just one of those games that everybody who got out there, I thought, looked about as well as they're going to look all preseason. I'd be shocked if we go, "Wow, this was actually better than the other night." But either way, like, this was about as good. This is definitely the best the Lakers have looked this preseason. And we might look back on this and say, this is kind of where Frank Vogel and the rest of the team started to understand, okay, these are the various roles that guys are going to kind of sink into. And this is a rotation that makes the most sense given the skill sets of all of these guys. And I thought, you know, the way that the guards played last night, that went a long way in continuing to set the tone. Obviously, with a team as talented up front as the Lakers are, they're going to be the tone setters for the entire game. But if the guards step up and match that level of play, you know, relatively speaking, because they don't have a LeBron James in the backcourt, obviously they don't have an Anthony Davis type talent in the backcourt. But if they can kind of match that production and just kind of keep up and not slow down the team from a guard perspective, now you're looking at a ridiculously talented Lakers team. This is this, you know, again, it's all the caveats aside, preseason, home opener, you had a little extra juice there. Golden State was extremely shorthanded, blah, 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 blah. But you do still have the, I think, seeds being planted in how the Lakers should look when they're at their best. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, there's a piece that is missing out here. And I think trying to figure out where that fits, because you are going to have to find a spot for Kuzma, figuring out where that fits, instead of it being like, God, they're going to have to try to figure out a place for Rondo. Just please don't be terrible. With Kuzma, it's the opposite of that. It's, no, he can, yes, the Lakers looked incredible last night, but holy crap, Kuzma can make them even look better. That's the exciting thing. So let's get to that here in a second. So Kuzma, a few things on Kuzma. One, this has nothing to do with the game, but one, it was really cool during the shoot-around that the Lakers had today, watching him work with Phil Handy, both in practice and then eventually later at Staples Center. It was really cool to see, and I'll retweet the clip. We've it's been all over Twitter, but it was really cool to see how specific Handy is about foot placement, footwork, hand placement, you know, all of those things. As they were working today, the clips that we saw was basically like dribbles between the legs, hesitation into a mid-range jumper, which is something that is good to work with from the perspective of developing skills that you can hopefully expand out further on the court. But watching him put that work in, it was great to see how specifically Handy was coaching him through all of the various additions to his game that they're apparently working on. So that was really cool to see. And, you know, now to transfer that into the game, what the Lakers didn't quite have or still don't quite have is somebody to provide length and also space the floor in those lineups when Anthony Davis and LeBron James are the five and the four respectively. That makes the Lakers even better. Like, as dominant as the Lakers looked when Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee were out there against the extremely undermanned Golden State front court, well, they aren't going to play against the undermanned Golden State front court on a nightly basis. There are going to be some games where the matchup calls for Davis sliding down to the five, LeBron sliding down to the four, and still having length out there at the three, right? Because technically you could slide Danny Green to the small forward, but he doesn't have, you know, prototypical small forward length. And that goes for, you know, even further to that point across the rest of the roster. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is, I think, only about 6'4". You have Alex Caruso, again, who's also about 6'4". So the guys get smaller as you go down this list. And maybe it becomes Andre Iguodala on the buyout market. A couple guys were waived by the Washington Wizards, who I think the Lakers, or I knew at least one that the Lakers are probably going to be interested again in, and that's Jamario Jones. But Justin Anderson also is kind of an intriguing guy. But for right now, given the guys who are actually on the roster, Kuzma's the only, again, as we talked about in yesterday's show, the only kind of natural small forward in terms of size and skill set. And when you add that kind of a player to the Lakers, given the way that they played last night, well, that's when you really start to go, oh, holy crap. Right? And that's if Kuzma is even mediocre. If he does take a step forward by, you know, via the work, there's a reason I started with the work that he was doing with Phil Handy. If that coaching does kind of pay off with Kuzma, and he is above average to good at that position, now you're really talking about, okay, yeah, this team makes a ton of sense and can present something kind of regardless of the situation. The other thing I really liked watching, and you know, I could have talked about this with the guards, but I think this has more to do with the general principle about the team, but the Lakers spent a lot of time with four out type of lineups with either Dwight or JaVale or Anthony Davis, whatever. And, you know, when you have those kind of four out lineups, and you like the lineups that I saw quite a bit, or one of the lineups that come to mind was Quinn Cook, Alex Caruso, I think it was KCP, Jared Dudley, and Dwight Howard was one of the lineups. And if you basically swap out either Caruso or Cook or KCP for Kyle Kuzma, well, yes, you are still going to be relatively small up front with Jared Dudley being your kind of pseudo power forward, but you're still going to have length on the perimeter that makes some of the offensive scenarios that you're putting the other team in a little trickier, right? Because that's the benefit of length. Like, that's the purpose of length, is just make the other team feel a little bit more uncomfortable just by way of how long you happen to be. And Kuzma kind of fits into that slot, and those four out lineups that I don't think the Lakers are going to use a ton of, right? Because, like, LeBron would probably be, you want one of those guys to be LeBron at some point. But you aren't going to have, when you do have those four out lineups and your small forward is still only Danny Green, you're kind of susceptible to offensive runs from the other team just because you don't have enough length to make up for the lack of size that you have up front. Like, the ultimate example here is when you have on the Golden State Warriors, it was like Steph, and you had Klay and Andre Iguodala and Kevin Durant and Draymond Green, and that was your squad out there. Yes, Draymond Green is small as the five in that lineup, but you have so much length with Klay and with KD and with Iguodala that you could get away with that kind of lack of size up front. And now, you know, Dwight is more of a prototypical center, so you don't necessarily need length to the same extent, and that was, you're never going to be able to replicate that kind of a lineup that the Warriors were able to put together out there over the last few years. But you still want some length out there, and Kuzma being able to step in and provide that, like, that's really exciting to consider. The other guy who I've been really, really impressed with, ironically, and this is, again, single game plus minus, you guys know how I treat this. I look at the guy at the top of the list, and I look at the guy at the bottom of the list. In this case, it's Jared Dudley. He finishes somehow with a minus two in a game that the Lakers thoroughly dominated and won by 30. Jared Dudley finishes with a minus two, but just in terms of, again, like, it's when I talked about Avery Bradley, it's not just about the actual production, it's about how did you get there? And the Jared Dudley's approach to the game, like, one of the things that really stand out to me, and one of the things that you can maybe keep an eye on when you guys watch at home, is watch him on offense, and he knows exactly where he should be looking as soon as he receives the ball, whether it's a rotation, whether it's, you know, a back cut off of a secondary option, whether it's to look for his own shot or to drive or whatever it is. He knows before he gets the ball just because he's such a smart vet. And the same kind of thing applies. Like, you usually think of that with defense, where positionally you say, yeah, Jared Dudley, every time you look at him, was standing in the right spot, took the right angle, blocked off the proper pass, whatever it was. Like, that's usually what you think of when you think of high IQ type veteran play. But offensively, it's just as important to have guys out there, veterans out there, who help with the rhythm of the offense, especially this early in the preseason, and this early in the kind of in the process of developing this entire team and watching it grow together, having guys like Dudley out there who understand the offense, and not just the Lakers offense specifically, but general NBA offensive principles that allow him to know what's probably going to be open before he even gets the ball. Like, that was Lonzo Ball's great kind of underrated talent, was how quickly he could make decisions when on the catch. And to have somebody like that in Dudley, who is going to be low usage, like if you have somebody who is going to be low usage and they still make great impactful decisions as soon as they catch the ball, like that's the perfect role player. And it was great to see that from Dudley thus far. Great all-around game. It was a lot of fun to watch. I especially like watching games now with Chen, just because, you know, last year and over the last few years, as we've been covering this, or as I've been covering this team, it's kind of a slog to get through those games when, given how bad the Lakers have been. But this was the kind of game that you really enjoy from start to finish. There were plenty of wow moments. Shouts to JaVale, who's probably going to finish the season shooting like 85%, because all he's going to get is wide open dunks. But everything about this game was just fantastic. It was a lot of fun. And also, like, an underratedly fun aspect of this is, and I'm not going to, I don't want to paint this to seem as if I'm using the entire controversy over the last, you know, couple weeks here as any kind of a gain for the Lakers, but they really seem to have come together over the course of that China trip. All of them talked about how, well, they couldn't do anything. Usually they would kind of break apart and you do sightseeing, you do business trips or whatever it is. They all kind of had to stick together throughout the entire trip. And there was that play, and it was almost comical, where LeBron goes to the floor. He was down there by the Lakers bench, and I think it was like literally every Laker who has every player who has ever worn a Lakers jersey ran over to pick him up off the floor. So that was, I don't know, it's a small stupid moment that you kind of notice amidst the other moments that you kind of see over the course of a game. But that kind of stuck out as the Lakers do have, hopefully, some potential it's us against the world type of a vibe to them. And, you know, that's a great source to drive passion throughout the season from. And we kind of saw it in last night's game in some great ways, in some very material ways. So all around, great game. Again, the Lakers wind up beating the Golden State Warriors 123-96. They don't play, obviously, tomorrow. They play Friday in San Francisco. Pete and I will come together, and I want his thoughts on this game as well. So for now, though, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.